Okay, we're starting on the Mishnah in Mem Gimel Amud Bet. Hamares et bito v'gersha. Okay, so now we have a guy, he gets his daughter engaged, and then she gets divorced. Irsa, then she gets engaged again, v'nit armela, and then her husband dies. Okay, Nebuch girl here. Okay, but both were from engagement only. Now we're going to learn something interesting. Until now, you've always assumed who gets the ketubah? The woman gets the ketubah, right? But if she's only engaged and she's still a na'ara or a ketana, where she's still in her father's reshut for money, so ketubata shelo, he gets the ketubah money. Because again, she's still a na'ara. Okay, we're going to see the difference whether she was married or not. At this point, she's only been engaged. So remember, when you're engaged, you haven't left your father's house yet fully. Therefore, he gets her ketubah money. What if he marries her and then she gets divorced, or he marries her and then he marries her off again and she gets her husband dies, she gets widowed. Ketubata shela. In that case, she gets the ketubah. Why is that? The assumption is once you get married, then you basically cut your ties with your father. In other words, at that point, you're independent. It's not like you've totally cut your ties, but that makes you totally independent. So at that point, you're independent, and your ketubah goes to you. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Harishona Shel Av. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says, from your first marriage, if you were married off by your father and you were still young, and the ketubah was written then, right? Then your father gets your ketubah money. Interesting, right? Amrulo Mishihi Si'a Ein La Via Rishupa. And now Chachatanakama Chachamim, they say to him, "What are you talking about? Once she gets married, her father has no more reshupa. Why should he get the ketubah?" Okay, so we're going to get into his opinion soon. First, the Gemara is going to go off on a total side issue, very short. One thing they're going to say from this Mishnah is, if you notice the order in the Mishnah, what happens? She gets either engaged or married, and then she gets divorced, right? Gersha. In the second case, then she gets remarried, and she's nit armela, right? She becomes a widow. So now, what happened here? What did they say? When it comes to the marriage case, they specifically wrote that she gets divorced first and then widowed. Aval nit armela trezimne tulo chazil leinsube. But if she were widowed twice, she certainly wouldn't be allowed to get married again. Vagav orche kastam lentana kirevi damar betrays simne havi chazaka. Here they're just throwing in another sugya that we've learned before, which is, do you establish, we generally say we establish chazaka three times, but there's certain times where we pass them, like Rebbe. Rebbe has this opinion that with chazaka, it can be from two times, that you establish a precedent, and a woman who's, you know, a black widow, as we would call her, she causes the death of, right, an isha katlanit in halacha, she causes the death of her husband twice, that's the assumption. If she marries someone and he dies, well, maybe she's done something wrong, and therefore, we're going to call her an isha katlanit, and we're not going to allow her to marry again. And they're saying specifically the Mishnah could have said nit armela twice, and it doesn't say it twice just to teach you this other halacha, even though they're not really talking about her remarrying here, right? They're just talking about her getting the ketubah money. So it's a little off topic, but it's just another way of the Gemara reiterating, here the Mishnah goes like Rebbe, that a chazaka can be established with two times. Now we're going back to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer HaRishona Shel Av. My time under Rabbi Yehuda. Why does he say that the father gets the ketubah from the first marriage, even though, right, Chachamim say, what do you mean? She's already been married. When she's married, she's in her own reshut. Rabbi Rav Yosef to Amr Travayu, ho'il mishat erusin, zacha behen ha'av. What happens? When you get engaged, who got her engaged? The father, right? He got her engaged. At that moment, we talked about this already. When does the ketubah get written generally, you remember? Not at the time of the Erusin, at the time of the marriage. Remember, there was usually about a year plus between the marriage and the engagement, or the engagement and the marriage. Generally, the ketubah was only written later, but in the event that they actually go through with the marriage, it's as if from the time of Erusin, it's as if there was a ketubah. Remember, we learned that even if you don't write a ketubah, it's as if the ketubah is written, the Beitin can demand a ketubah from you. They can demand the 200 zuz, even if you haven't written her ketubah. So, what do we have here? They're saying as soon as the father married her off, he already gained the rights to the ketubah because this woman was deserving of the rights of the ketubah at that point. At that point, he was the owner of her money. So therefore, from the time of the Erusin, Zachah Ben Av. Matev Rava says, wait a minute, that doesn't work, because we have another source that says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Harishona Shal Av, Umodeh Rabbi Yehuda B'mares Et Bito Kashihi Ktana U'Bagra V'Achar Kach Niset She'en La V'ya Rishutba. Rabbi Yehuda will be Modeh in what case? He'll agree that in a case where the daughter got engaged. Okay, so now, at the moment of the engagement, what was she? B'Shad Erisin, she was a Ktana, right? Then, by the time of the Nisuin, she was a Bogeret. In that kind of a case, Rabbi Yehuda, now according to what we said a minute ago, Rav and Rabbi Yosef, the way they explained it, what did we say? It's all what happens at the moment of Erisin. The moment of Erisin, she was a Ktana, therefore the father gets it. But in this case, at the moment of Erisin, she was a Ktana, but at the moment of Nisuin, she was a Bogeret. And Rabbi Yehuda says, in this case, the father doesn't get her ketubah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the father only gets the ketubah if at the time of marriage, she was still a Ktana, okay, or a Nara. But if she's already a Bogeret, then it won't work. So that doesn't make any sense then what Rav and Rav Yosef said. So therefore, they changed what they said. So first, I didn't read the whole thing. Hachanani, so you should say the same thing by us. Lema ho ilu mishat erusin zacha behena av. And you should have said that here, and they don't say it. So therefore, it can't be that. Ela itmar hachitmar. But if they really said this, this must be what they said. This is a way of rereading, because Rav and Rav Yosef don't make any sense. Right, again, conceivably, Rav and Rav Yosef never saw that source and misunderstood Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, that's possible. But assuming now we have the real Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, the other source about him, so we're going to assume that maybe Rav and Rav Yosef said something else. Rav and Rav Yosef d'amar travayu, ho'ilu b'rishuto nichtavin. Okay, so the Rav and Rav Yosef said the reason is because the ketubah was written. Right, it doesn't go by the moment of Erusin. It goes by the moment, let's assume, just before the Nisuin, of Ketivat HaKetubah. That's the moment that's important. Not the moment of the Nisuin, not the moment of the Erusin, but the moment of the writing of the Ketubah, which is usually just before the Nisuin. And if when the Ketubah is written, the father, the woman's still in the father's reshut, then she's not yet a Bogeret, then we're going to assume that the money goes to the father. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Again, Tanakhama disagrees. They think, once she gets married, it becomes hers. In other words, you have to remember, when does she demand the ketubah? Much later, right? Not at that moment. She demands it when the husband divorces her or he dies. At that point, she's her own woman. But comes Rabbi Yehuda, and he says, no, no, no. It goes back to the moment of the writing of the ketubah. Okay? Now, because they bring this up, we're going to go into a whole other issue, which I need to give you a little background, which is called Shiabud Nechasim. We've gotten to this before, but we're going to talk about it more now. What does that mean? If I take out a loan, and I take out a loan from someone, and then after I take out the loan, before I pay back the money, I sell some property of mine. Now, if I took out a loan, let's say, it depends what kind of a loan, but let's say I take out a loan bichtav, okay, with a shtar. If I take out a loan with a shtar, then and I sell my house, and the guy comes back to collect his loan, and I've got nothing anymore. I can't pay back the loan. Okay, what do they do? That's, you can't take my house is not mine anymore. But what do we say? If it's a milva b'shtar, then since I have a document, therefore whoever bought my house should have known that what? That I had a big loan out, and he should have, you know, and therefore he's also responsible. So they can come and take my house away from the guy who bought my house from me. Okay, now, this makes it difficult to sell property, right? Because right now, either I sell it for a much lower value, or I can sell it with achrayut nechasim. What do? I say to this guy, if someone were to come and demand this property from you, because I didn't pay back a loan, you can go demand it from other property of mine that I sold. Okay, I give him, it's like a jump from, there's regular achrayut nechasim, and then there's even more. I can say, I'm selling you this house, but you now have the rights to demand, if someone takes this house away from you, you could take some other property that I have. Now, what if I don't have property? That's a separate thing. But if I already committed, then I'm going to have to come up with some way because I've committed. So we're going to get into both those levels. There's like two levels there. One is the first level of, now, how does this work, though? It only affects sales that happened after that date of, you know, when it comes to the first guy, it's after the date I took the loan out. When I took the loan, any property I owned before that, if I owned the house before that, well, then it doesn't matter. But no, sorry. Any property I sold after that, if I didn't have my house at the time of the loan, well, then obviously he can't go demand it from there. But anything I sold after that date, he can go demand. Okay, and same thing with the next stage. When I sell my land to this guy and I say, well, you can now collect it from anything else I own, if someone were to collect it from you, right? Again, it's going to be from the date of that sale. Okay, so the dates are very important, and that's what we're going to talk about now. Now, a ketubah has the broadest ability to demand money because a ketubah is, like we said, even if you didn't write a ketubah, it's as if you know, the Beit Din says, you have a ketubah, you owe this woman money. And therefore, it's very easy to demand it. We can take it from any nechassim. But again, it has to be, these are called nechassim mishuabadim. Okay, they're, what's the word? How would you translate that? They're, like, shiabud is like a slave, right? A lien. So I can, So the ketubah, again, the woman can go demand the ketubah from any nechassim that the man sold from the time the ketubah, I don't know how to fill in that line, that's going to be the whole question. From what moment? From the time of the Erusin? Because even though we didn't write the ketubah at the time of the Erusin, she's entitled to the ketubah. Or is it from the time of the ketivat haketubah, which would affect any land that he sold from the time of the Erusin till the writing of the ketubah? All that time is going to be affected by this machloket, okay, this issue. You follow? So if she goes to demand her ketubah, and he doesn't have any money, and she goes to demand it from property he sold, can she go all the way back to the time of the Erusin, or only to the writing of the ketubah? That's the Gemara's question. So let's read it inside now. Okay. Umigva me'emat gavya. Okay, when she goes to be goved the nechassim, from when can she be goved? From someone else's nechassim. Amar Rav Huna, mana matai mina erusin, betosefet mina nisuin. This makes perfect sense, right? The mana or the matayim, depending on whether she's a betula or a behula, is going to be the one that is a basic part of the ketubah, right? No matter what. Even if he doesn't write a ketubah, the Beit Din can demand. What can the Beit Din demand? That if she was a betula, she gets matayim. And if she wasn't a betula, she gets mana, 100. So that is already, from the moment of Erusin, that's already, even though they haven't written the ketubah, that's already valid. So there, you know, he's already chayav. So therefore, she can already demand it from the mana matayim, right? The mana matayim from the Erusin. But if he added anything, which there's tosefet ketubah, and he can add in more schumim if he wants, the tosefet is only from the time of the nisuim, which really means the time of the writing of the ketubah.
Is that why when we read ketubah at weddings today, we hear about the matayim zuz or the basic thing, and then afterwards they say v'hachatan hosif?
So that's the tosefet ketubah, yes. What we read in the ketubah, we read the basic amount, the matayim zuz, v'hachatan hosif, that we read the tosefet. That's the tosefet ketubah. That means he can add, and generally, there's another matayim zuz added, if I remember correctly, and then he even sometimes adds more. And then there's certain communities where it's like a whole thing. Everybody listens carefully because they want to see, like, oh, how much money did he commit to her? There's like a whole, in certain communities, that's like a big issue. Everybody listens up, you know, oh, what did he add? Some people specifically for that reason avoid, they don't say it. They don't like to say, right. I think, if I remember correctly, there's a few differences between ketubot in America and ketubot in Israel. And one of them, I can't remember now which one, just says tosefet ketubah and doesn't say the amount, I think. I think, or it's not specified, or it's not, I forget. There's something about it. There's some difference. I don't remember. Okay. Rav Asi Amar, he disagrees. He says, echadze v'echadze min anisun. Even the matayim is from the nisun. Now, so everything gets only collected from the ketivat haketubah. She can't demand anything from the time of the Erusin. Umi amar Rav Huna hachi. Did Rav Huna really say this? Okay, did Rav Huna really say that the matayim and the right gets already collected from the beginning? The ha'itmar, isn't it said, hutzia alav shtei ketubot, echad shal matayim v'echad shal shloshmil. Let's say she comes to the Beit Din or she happens to have in her reshut two ketubot. One says, I'm giving you 200, and one says, I'm giving you 300. It's going to be a whole confusion about what exactly this means. Why does she have two ketubot? Is one in place of the other? Is one in addition to the other? We're going to see a bunch of cases where there's shtei shtarot. We're going to move off of ketubot into something else. How do we relate to them? So now, let's say she has two shtarot. Okay, I charted this out on the sheet. Okay, if you don't have a sheet, there's some in the middle. Ketuba number one says 200, ketuba number two says 300. Okay, I just gave some random dates. Okay, but let's say the first ketuba is Nisan and the second ketuba is Sivan. Okay, so there's 2 months difference. And now she comes to demand a ketuba. When does she get it from? So what does Rav Huna say? I'm Rav Huna, bat ligvot matayim, gova mizman rishon, shlosh meot gova mizman sheni. Okay? It depends which one she collects. And the point is, Rav Huna says she obviously can't collect from two ketubot. So she's going to take either one. And then if she takes the 200, she demands it from the time of the erusin. And if she, the time it was written in Nisan. And if she demands the second one, she gets it from Sivan. Then she gets 300, but she can only collect it from lands from Sivan. So now here's our question on Rav Huna. Vim ita, and if according to what you said, Rav Huna, that she can be gover from the time of the erusin, right? The manor of the mataim, tigbe mataim mizman rishon, umea mizman sheni. You should be at least allowed to collect the first 200 from the earlier date. And then the additional 100 from the second date.
So we're going to get into this.
It's very, it's a little hard to understand, but we're going to get into this. So what's the idea here? So now, what do they say? Vilit amech, this is really your question, Naomi. According to this, how much can she collect the maximum? 300. So he's saying, well, if that's the way you're understanding, and in which case we've now raised a question on Rav Huna, tigbe chamesh meot, right? Kulam. In other words, you should be able to, if you're viewing this as two different ketubot, and they both have tokef, so then she should be allowed to say, I want the 200, and I want the 300. Now, why? What would be the assumption here? What's the 300? The 300 is a tosefek ketuba. Let's assume, let's take an example, okay? The guy didn't have a ton of money, so he gave her a basic ketuba. Then, 2 months later, he won the lottery. And he's got a lot of money. And he says, you know what, I'm going to give you tosefek ketuba, and here's 300 zuz. That's the way the Gemara is suggesting right now. Maybe that's what happened here. And then the 300 is all tosefek. So if you're saying we're going to demand from the first date in Nisan and the tosefek from Sivan, well, then the tosefek should be the whole 300. So why are you only giving her 300 altogether? It should be 500. Matai mizman rishon, tlat mea mizman sheni, and the 300 from the second date. So what do they say? Ella, but that's obviously not what's going on here. Ella chamesh meot, my time alo gavya. Why can't you demand the chamesh meot? Kevan de lo katavla. Now we're going to see. It depends what he writes. Since he didn't write to her, tzviti ve'osifa lach tlat mea amataim, right? Since he didn't say, I am adding, in the second ketubah, it didn't say, I'm adding 300 to what I already wrote to you before. Hachi kamale, it must be that this is what he's saying to her. Okay, now this answers your question, Naomi. Why was he doing this? This is what he says. Im izman rishon gviat gavya matayim. Im izman sheni gviat gavya tzlat mea. The best way I understood this means that what he's saying is, I'm giving you a choice. You can either, it's like a gambling kind of thing almost, right? If you want, you can take only 200, but you can demand it from an earlier date. So if there's all these nechasim I sold in between, you know, Nisan and Sivan, right? The time of the erusin and the time of writing the ketuba, or the time of the both ketuba being written. So if you want to demand it from those properties, fine, no problem, but you're only going to get 200. And if you want, though, you can demand 300. You can get more money, but you can only demand it from the later date. And you can't go, you know, on those nechasim that I sold in that in-between time. It's sort of like that. That's what he's giving her. So she has two options. No one's going to let her be gove to ketubot, right? So therefore, what are we basically saying then? And then, so therefore, hachanami, likewise, right? Hainu tama, that's the reason why Rav Huna says, right? Delo gavya, that's why you can't demand all the 500. And also, he can't demand it from the earlier date. She can't demand any of the 300 from the earlier date because that was the deal he made with her. This was a unique thing where it kind of overrides the base halacha. The base halacha is you can demand it from the erusin, but since he's giving her this option, I'll give you more money, but you have to commit that you're not going to demand it from the time of the erusin. So then it overrides the halacha, basically, because they've made an agreement outside of halacha, basically. You follow? So now, so since midelo katav laosifa lach mea amataim, since he was not saying I'm adding more money onto the mataim that you're owed, It must be that there's two separate ketubot here, and therefore, achule achilte l'shibuda kama. She agreed that if she's going to demand this 300, she's mochel, achule is mochel, she's mochelet on the shiabud rishon that should have been. Okay, so therefore, we don't have a question on Rav Huna from this case. Because this case is a unique case where basically they made some agreement between them. If you want more money, you can have more money, but you can't demand it from the shibud. And she was mochel on it. And therefore, there is no shibud kama here. Okay, so, and then Amar Mar, and that's when Rav Huna said, Ibai Bahai Gavya, Ibai Bahai Gavya. If she wants, she can demand from this ketubah. If she wants, she can demand from that ketubah. Obviously, it doesn't relate to some things we talked about in the past, which is, you know, what happens? She can demand one ketubah, and then she still has another shtar in her hand. Remember, we had this whole thing about a shtar. Once you have a shtar, they rip the shtar up. You know, once you pay it, so now she's still got another shtar in her hand. Now it could be like he would write a shovar, you know, and say, "I paid you the ketubah," and sign some signatures. He'd have to protect himself because it's a little bizarre having two ketubot outstanding. It could create problems down the road. Anyway, that's a separate thing. Now the Gemara wants to suggest that Rav Huna, lema pliga de Rav Nachman, that he must cholek on Rav Nachman. Why? De amar Rav Nachman, here we're going to get into a different case of shnei shtarot, but not with ketubah. Shnei shtarot hayotzim b'ze achar ze. Let's say I sold my house, and I sell my house once, and then I write another shtar selling the same house to the same person. Okay? So if I have shnei shtarot hayotzim b'ze achar ze, b'tel sheni et harishon. Okay? The first one is canceled by the second one. Okay, maybe there was a mistake in the first shtar, maybe there was something wrong with it, maybe, right? Obviously, if I'm writing two shtarot, yeah, to the same person on the same house, same property, obviously the second one is going to cancel the first. So now what do you see here? This is, right? Rav Nachman said they can't, one cancels the other. And what did Rav Huna say? They didn't, one didn't cancel the other. They both exist, and it's just a matter of which one you're going to use. So that's the question. So now they say, no, you can't say they're chole, because lav mi itmar, sorry, I lost my place. Right, lav mi itmar la, doesn't it say on that case that Rav Nachman said, that Amar Rav Papa, okay, wasn't it said that Rav Papa said about Rav Nachman's shita, Umoder Rav Nachman di Osef Badikla litosefet katve. Rav Nachman says, let's say I sold my house, but then I want to say I'm selling you my house and my palm tree. Okay, which I guess my palm tree maybe is outside my property and therefore wasn't included in my house or something like that, right? Or I'm selling you something and now I'm adding something. Then we can assume that it's not overriding it, okay? Then it's just adding on to it. Okay, and then we don't necessarily say it cancels the first.
It's like when
Hachanami.
It's like when you do like a carousel to the will. It's like, this is my will, but this is my,
right,
adding something to that.
Exactly,
will.
I'm adding something. So if he adds something different, then we can assume that it's just an addition. In which case, what do we have here? Our case of Rav Huna, he clearly added something, right? One said 200, one said 300. The 300 was an addition, and therefore it doesn't cancel the first one. So you could say that they don't argue because Rav Nachman was also interested that he didn't say this every single time there's two shtarot. He said in a particular case where we weren't adding anything. So therefore you could say the same thing here. Okay? So therefore we would say, Hachanami, also here, Ha'osif Lamidi, he added something, and therefore Rav Nachman wouldn't think that it was canceled out. Okay, now we're going to get into Rav Nachman itself. Gufa. So we brought Rav Nachman to say maybe Rav Huna disagrees with Rav Nachman. We ended up saying not necessarily. Amar Rav Nachman, Shnei shtarot hayotzim b'zeh achar zeh. Bitel sheni et harishon. Amara papa, umod Rav Nachman di osif badikla litosefe katve. Now they're going to say, in what case are we talking about? Okay, so now look at the chart at the bottom, okay? The assumption I said was I sold my house twice, okay? But now they're going to say, what if you say, okay, pshita rishon b'mecher v'sheni b'matana. Let's say I say, I sold you my house, and the second star says, I gave you my house as a gift, okay? So now, why are we going to assume that it's okay, that the second one isn't canceling out the first one? Because liapot kochohu dekatavle. He wanted to make it better for the guy he was selling it to. He was trying to do him a favor. Why is he doing him a favor? Mishum dina debar metzra. Okay, what does this mean? The neighbor has rights. If you sell something, your neighbor has rights to say, I want first dibs on it. Okay? So if you're selling your house and your neighbor really wants to buy your house, your next door neighbor, from Va'asita HaYashar VaHatov, okay, that's this pasuk where they learn out you should do the right thing. You should give your neighbor first rights to your property, right? You see this in Ranan all the time, right? People buy two properties because they want to build a gigantic house, and they can, you know, it's much better that way to be able to have the next door neighbor's house because it's better for you. Then you're able to make your house the way you want it, right? Otherwise, you're stuck with your small property and you can't get to the next, you know, you can't, it's not going to help you to have a house down the block and a house over here and I can, you know, connect them with some tunnel or something, right? So the best thing to do is to buy the property next door. You should have first dibs on that. So now, what's the issue? Let's say, so I'm selling my house. So my neighbor, my next door neighbor here, should have first dibs to my property. So let's say I decide I'm selling it to someone else. And he comes and claims, I want to buy the property and I don't want to sell it to him for whatever reason. So now what happens? He can demand that I give him the property. But if I gave it as a gift to someone, then he can't do that. Okay? So now if I first write a sale, but then I write it as a gift, we understand why I'm doing that. In other words, I'm doing it to help the guy who I want to move into my house so that he can avoid the neighbor getting the house. V'kol shekein, rishon b'matana v'sheni b'mecha. Let's say it's the flipped. First I wrote it as a gift, then I wrote it as a sale. Damrina mishum dina deba'al chof hu shekatav kein. Okay, why did I write it first as a, why did I first give it to him as a matana and then I decided to give it as a sale? That's because, wait, I forgot this for a minute. Dina de Balchov, Rashi says, Di ate Balchov vitarif lemine, kibel alabachrayu pishtar sheni. Din hard of enigma ma'ot haktuvim kan. That if the Balchov would come and take it from him, right, then, wait, how did this work? I forgot. Second. If I gave, one second, if Hanotain, Hosipa Katav L'Shtar Mecher, right, I gave you this property as a gift and then I rewrote it as a Shtar Mecher. Right. If I give it to you as a gift, then a Baal Chov would not be able to.
As a gift, he would be able to.
He would be able to take it.
If you own it, you only have some.
That's it. I would be responsible here. One second. Yigvut hasadeh. Shtar mecher, right? Shtar mecher has achrayut. This is what we talked about in the beginning of class. A shtar mecher has achrayut. If I sell you my thing, and then they come and demand it, so I have to give you the money back. But if I gave it to you as a gift, I don't have to. So here, I wrote you the gift to base it. At first, I gave it to you as a gift, but then I was being a nice guy here. I wrote it to you then as a mecher so that you'd have achrayut on it. So that if someone comes and demands it, you can come demand it back for my property. You know, obviously I'm doing this out of the goodness of my heart because it's just worse for me. But that's why you could see that someone would do that. Okay? And therefore, again, so then in both these cases, right, the first would cancel out the third. Wait, one second. According to this then, right, this is all, one second, to explain.
It doesn't cancel out the first. In the second situation, the second deed does not cancel out the first.
Oh, really? No, bash, darshini. Right, exactly. It's coming just to add to it. It's adding an added element, but it doesn't cancel it. That's the point. In each of these cases, we can see why the second time you do it, it's to add something else. It added an element that didn't exist before, even if you didn't add a dekel tree or whatever it might be. So now, what do you see? Because the first one changes the status that the guy can now say, I own this land, and the neighbor can't say, I have first rights to the property because it was a gift. So it added that it's a gift. If the gift is second. Because the gift is coming to say, yes, it's true, I sold it to you. So you're right, I sold it to you. But now I'm giving you a shtar, I'm saying it's a gift. And now that I'm saying it's a gift, now the neighbor can't demand the property from me.
It's like a warranty.
From you, basically.
It's a warranty.
Right. Right. In both cases, right, I guess you're saying in both cases it's a warranty. In both cases it means that this guy, no one can come push him off his land. The neighbor can't come and say, I wanted to buy this land, because he says, oh, it was a gift. He'll pull out the shtar that says it was a gift. He'll use that. Now, do you understand? Here's, we're allowing someone to play with reality. We're allowing him to say, if the neighbor comes and says, I want to buy this house, what do we say? No, I have a shtar. It was a gift. You can't take it from me. Okay? Same thing. If someone who, there's a lien on the property, right, and I owe money, he can come and say, I want to take this property away from you. And you can come and say, fine, you can take this, but, you know, probably what would happen in that case is, I'll say to him, go take it from some other property, right? That, in other words, I have rights to this property. Or at least, if they take it from you, you'll be able to go demand and say, listen, it was a mecher, it wasn't a matana, it was a real sale, and therefore you can go demand it from someone else.
So okay,
it's
really
a fictitious, if I understand it correctly, it's a fictitious shtar, but it allows you to, gives you strength. It's a little weird to imagine the people are sending out these fictitious shtarot. That's why it's a little hard to follow, but that's the way I understand. But ish nehem b'mecher, shnehem b'matana, b'tel sheni et harishon. Okay, but if both are exactly the same, and there's no added thing, then the second one cancels the first, and we assume it's just the second one that's good. My time, huh? What's the reason then? Why would you do this? Okay, this goes to, you know, why would this happen? So, Rafar Mamar, Imar Aduye Odule. Okay, he's saying that, 1 second, I'm not sure. Right, he's admitting that there was something wrong with the shtar, okay? He's saying, oh yeah, we forged the signatures, it wasn't a good shtar, now I'm going to give you a good shtar. Rav Achamar, Imar Achule Achle L'Shiabude. He's saying, I'm going to write the second shtar obviously is happening later. So let's say the first shtar happened in Nisan, the second shtar is from Sivan. He's saying that this guy, when the guy agreed, the buyer, he was agreeing that I'm going to be mochel on the shibud of those 2 months. We're now writing a new shtar so that it only starts from here. Okay, the shibud. Wait, am I saying it right? The shibud for, it would be the opposite. It would be the shiva, who would this be in whose best interest? It would be in the best interest of Hamakabel. Oh, yeah, no, it is. Right. The guy who buys it. He's the Makabel is Mochel the Shibud of the first star. If the Balei Chov come to collect it, right, it's only from this date can I go collect from other people, right? He's Achrayut now, right? He says, right, when I sell my house, I say that if someone collects it, you can go collect it from other property of mine, but from what date? From the date the shtar was written. So what happened? For whatever reason, I wanted to postpone that date, and the guy agreed, and he basically said, fine, we'll take the second shtar. We'll write the exact same shtar. We'll put the date later, and then if someone comes and demands my property, you can only come, right, I'll only take from property that you sold from this point on. Okay. So now, my benai, what's the difference whether you say he was moded that the shtar was mezuyah, or the makaba was mochel on the shibud. Ikabinayu, oruye sahade. Number one, do we say that the people who were signed on that first shtar, are they now pasula edu? Right? Because they signed on a forged shtar. Okay? So do we say that? Or, right, that would be a nafkamina. Or lishlome pere. Now, if I sell you property, right? And then I say, oh, well, I'm only selling you the property from Sivan, not from Nisan. So what happens to all the produce that came from that property between Nisan and Sivan? Who gets the proceeds of that thing? So if we say it was, he was mochel the shibud, then he'd be mochel the peiro. But if he says, oh, do you odele, there was a forgery, then, no, 1 second. If it was a forgery, what would we say? Right, but no. If it was a forgery, it's the opposite. If he was just mochel on the shibud, he wasn't mochel on the rivachim, he was just mochel on the shibud. But the property really belonged to him. He's just saying, I won't demand property that you sold after that date. But if it was that the shtar was forged, well then the shtar is no good, the sale wasn't good, and the sale is only good from this date on. Ulitaska, and in terms of property tax. So why property tax? So again, if it was a forgery, then there's no property, right? The property tax falls on the first owner. If it was that he was pushing off the date, well, you know, for the shibud, then it has no relevance. Okay, now they want to know, sof, my have ala tuba. So now going back, we got off our topic. What's the story with the tuba? From when can she demand land, right? From the time of the erusin or from the time of the writing of the ketuba? Tashma, let's learn from here. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Mana Matayim Mina Erusin V'Tosefet Mina Nisuin. Okay, the first 200 you can collect from the Erusin because that's already committed, and the Tosefet from the Nisuin. V'Chachamim Omrim Echad Zeh V'Echad Zeh Mina Nisuin. Both can be collected from the Nisuin. V'Hilchata Echad Zeh V'Echad Zeh Mina Nisuin. That's the way we paskin. Okay, we paskin Mina Nisuin. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda and the name of Shul passed down that there was a machloka between Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Chachamim, which it was, and they paskin that it's mina nisuin. Okay?
Two in a row ending with a halacha.
Two in a row what?
Ending with a halacha.
Right, yes. Okay, new Mishnah.
Is it because the Chachamim don't see it as a tosefet? Is that the nafkamina between the two of them?
Because they don't see it. No, this is just a regular case. This is, they're talking about...
They're saying that one doesn't nullify the other one.
When is the shibud karka? The shibud karka happens when you write the ketubah. Even though, really, you're supposed to give, right, and it's, she's deserving of the ketubah from the time of the Erusin. I think the assumption is, since generally the ketubot were written much later, right before the Nisuin, so they said, this is a shtar. When the shtar is written, that's when you demand the nechasin from. You also, if you think about it, I wonder...
But going back,
there's a date in the shtar of the ketubah, right?
Right.
If you're tying that dates, right, there's no shtar erusin necessarily, right? Erusin was done, I don't know, how is erusin done? Some, right, with, usually not by shtar, it was done with kesef, right? That's kiddushin, that's our, you know, tabat, yeah. Okay? So there is no date with that. Now, people can testify about a date, but it's much more, when you have the ketubah in your hand and you have a date on the ketubah, it makes much more sense to say any property from here on in becomes, you know, you can demand it from, but not necessarily going back, because who knows exactly what date the Erusin is. It could be that that's why. So like, you know, it makes more logical sense if you, in general, shibud karka always connects with a shtar. That's why a milva al peh, I didn't say this, but if you take a loan bal peh, there's no shibud. Okay, there's no shibud nechasim. I can only give it back to you, but if I don't give it back to you, then you can't demand it from other property.
And they use these other cases to show that it's not that it's, one doesn't nullify the other, but it's just a tosefet. Right?
Okay, that's a separate thing. That's, they jump from this issue to this case of two shtarot. But the real base case was when a regular writing of a ketubah, okay, which happens just before the nisuin, since the money is already committed from the erusin, yeah. Right, and as he has to already be giving her a ketubah, even though he doesn't necessarily give it yet, but he will in the future, and the commitment starts from now. Can she demand it from money, from property that he sold from the time of the erusin, or only from the time the ketubah was written?
But then why does it say echad zeh ve'echad zeh?
Because they want to know: do we distinguish between the 200 zoos that everybody has to commit to, that even if he didn't write a ketubah from the time of the Erusin, he has to commit that money to her, he has to give her, or add the tosefet, which we only know about when the ketubah is written, or do we not distinguish at all, and we go by everything from the time the ketubah was written? Even though the mana matayim is magiala earlier on, we only count it from the time we have the shtar. That's what it means, echad zeh echad zeh. Okay, new Mishnah. No, it's okay. Okay, we don't have a lot of time, but the rest of this is much simpler. Hagiyorat shenitgaira bita ima. Okay, she converts and her daughter converts with her. Vizinta, and now, so she's a giyoret basically, and she does znut. Hare zo bechenek.
The daughter.
The daughter. Okay, from erusin, and she, so Rashi says zinta be erusin vhi naara. Okay, now. Rashi says, "Harezo b'chenek va'afilu nitgaira p'chutami bat shalosh shanim de'becheskat betulehi dechiktiva skila b'nara morasa b'Yisrael ktiva." In other words, what's the issue here? The nara morasa, it says be Yisrael, and she's not a Yisrael because she's a giyoret. Okay, so she doesn't get the skila that the nara morasa would get. She only gets chenek. Okay, this is a unique halacha, and you start to see here a bit of a hierarchy. We've seen this before about Geirim. They're in a bit of a different category. Here also, we see they're not considered Nara Morasa Yisrael, and therefore they don't get the punishment of Sin. So, Ein La, okay, now we have to look for a minute at the Pesukim and Dvarim Kaf Bet, okay? We're going to learn now about Motzi Shemra. Ki kach ish isha u'bayla usna. He marries her and he hates her, okay? Put it on the back of your sheet. V'samla alilot varim. Okay, he makes up a whole story about her. V'otzia la shemra. V'amar et ha'isha zot lakachti. V'ekrav elea v'lo matzati la betulim. And he says, listen, she doesn't have betulim. I know that she slept with someone after we were engaged. And she should be killed, basically. V'lakach avia na'ara v'ima. V'otziu et betulea na'ara al zeknea yer hashara. Okay, the parents bring her betulim, you know, the sheet. Va'amar Rabbi Yanar alaz kinim et biti natati l'ish hazeh l'isha v'yisna'eha. And the father says, this guy obviously hates my daughter. V'yinei usam alilot varim lemor, etc. Okay? V'lakhu zikne'at yirat ha'ish v'yisru oto. Okay? They take this man and they give him malkot. V'anshu oto me'at kesef. In other words, if there's proof now that he was lying, they punish him me'at kesef. Okay, which by the way, I looked at Mea Kesef, they say, the Gemara says it's Mea Sela. Mea Sela is 50 shekel. Okay, our same amount, 200 zuz. V'natnu la'avia na'ara, and they give it to the father again. Ki otzi shem ra'al betula Yisrael. V'lo tiye li'isha, lo yuchal shachal koyamav. Again, right, this bizarre thing that we think is bizarre in our world, but in their world, he had to marry her then and stay married to her to protect her, because otherwise no one else would want to marry her. It was embarrassing. Really, though, it was true. What happens? She basically is a nara murasa who sleeps with a man, right? So they take her to the petach beit avia. Okay, it's like she did this huge embarrassment to her family. So they do it in front of her father's house. Uskalua anshei rab avanim vameta. Okay, use a very strange word. Why does it say vameta? What do you mean? They took her and they stoned her and she dies. Okay, what's that word doing there? Okay, so now we're going to learn that, okay, there's a few halachot here. There's the petach beit avia. So now, if she's a giyoret, ein la lo petach beit av. First of all, she doesn't have a father, right? Below ma'asela, okay, he doesn't pay the knas. Okay, she doesn't, in other words, on the one hand, she gets a better punishment, although she still gets killed, right? But not the skila, which is the worst. But yet she doesn't get, right, the masela either, if he was lying. Okay, we've learned this, right? What if the mother's pregnant with her when she's a non-Jewish, then she converts before she's born. Harezo b'skila. This is going to be an in-between. She gets skila. Ve'en la lo petach be'ta'ah ve'lo me'asela. She gets all the bad things but not the good things, right? Well, actually not, because there's still no petach be'ta'ah. Hayta horata ve'leida b'kdusha, harei kecho ba'Yisrael, keba Yisrael l'chol dvareha. Okay, then a real giyoret, though, who was born, right, she's not a giyoret, her mother was a giyoret, but she was born totally Jewish, then she gets everything. Yesh la'av, ein la petach yesh la'av, ein la petach beit ha'av. Sorry, how am I reading it? Yesh la'av, ein la petach beit ha'av. Sorry, this is a new case. Let's say she has a father, but she doesn't have a house. Yesh la petach beit ha'av, ve'ein la'av. Or she has a house, but she doesn't have a father. So now you might think that the halacha is dependent on having a petach beit ha'av. So what do they answer? Harezo b'skila. She still gets skila. Lo ne'emar petach beit ha'av ela l'mitzvah. It's just an added thing, but it's not like it's ma'akev or something. Okay. Minan emile. Amarish lakish de amarkra v'meta. Okay, where do we learn this from? Because it says that word that I told you was unnecessary, v'meta. Lirabot, it must come to include something else. What does it come to include? Horata shelo b'kdusha v'leidata b'kdusha. Okay, so now they say ihachi milka nami lilke umea sela nami l'shalem. In the case of horata shelo b'kdusha v'leidata b'kdusha, what did we say? He doesn't get malkot. We didn't say that, but it's assuming that he doesn't get malkot if he did it, because if he's not paying the mea sela, he also doesn't get malkot. So then umea sela nami l'shalem. If we're going to say that she's included, then why is she included only for the death but not for him paying the knas? So amar kra umeta. Lemita nirbata v'lo l'knas. In other words, because the word was v'meta that we learned it from, we only learn that she's included when it comes to the meta, but we don't learn that she's included when it comes to the knas and the punishment for him. You follow? The whole limud was from the word v'meta, so it only applies to the mavet issue. Ve'ema, why don't we say l'rabot horata v'leidata b'kdusha and not include this other case of horata shelo b'kdusha v'leidata b'kdusha? They say, oh, there's no reason to add that because ha'i Yisraeli ma'al yatei. She's a 100% Jew. If her mother converted before, right here you see that she's not considered any different just because her mother converted. Only the convert herself is. Ve'ema l'rabot horata v'leidata shelo b'kdusha. Why don't we say it comes to include the case before that, right? Where she converts after she's born. Im Kain, b'Yisrael, Maya Hanele. Well, then what do you need the word for Yisrael? Okay, so they're basically saying that's how we got, they're trying to say how we got to the in-between, right? That she's a little bit, she's less, she's more, right? It's all from, Yisrael means she can't be 100% Giyore, right? Someone who converted entirely. The Bameta says, all right, the one who was born as, right, her mother was a convert, well, she's 100% Yisraeli, so she's not excluded from this at all. So the in-between case, right, and then we're going to say, only because it comes from the word Bameta, only the Mavet she's going to be included in, but not the Knas. Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Hanina, Hamotzi Shemra Ali Yitoma Patur. What if your Motzi Shemra, here's interesting, right, there is no Avina Ara, or you mean, right, the whole thing talks about the family. So what if she doesn't have a family? So he's patur. This is crazy, right?
Yeah.
You could see they could take advantage. Shenemar, b'nasnu la'avia nara, prat lezo she'en la'av. Matif Rabbi Yossi bar'av, and b'item Rabbi Yossi bar'zveda, v'im yima'en yima'en avia, l'rabot yitoma l'knas, divar Rabbi Yossi aglilihu. Okay, so what do you say? Rabbi Yossi aglili says, no, from im ma'en yima'en, they include the yitoma for knas. So why wouldn't it be included here too, right? That was the pasuk by the mefateh. So why wouldn't you also include the Yatoma here? So hu motiv la v'hu mefarek la. He explains. Biba aleha v'achar kach nit yatma. Okay? The only case where you're l'rabota ta Yatoma l'knas, the Yatoma gets knas only when? When it happened when she was not a Yatoma. But if she, right, if she became a Yatoma after, then she still gets it. But she doesn't get it if she was a Yatoma from the beginning. Okay? That's a really difficult thing to swallow, right? The Yatoma basically, but you have to view it as what? It was all the family that gets, it's the embarrassment for the family. That's how they viewed it. And a Yatoma doesn't have that element of, right, family to be embarrassed for. It's almost like, you know, there's less pressure on her head almost, right? There's a certain advantage to not having this family, you know, it added this whole element. Again, you have to view this all in terms of the way they lived and the way, you know, their society was very different than our society. You know, whatever. Someone told me that they're, I'm going to end with this, we're going to stop here. But someone was telling me that they're doing this whole study in different countries, taking Piskei Din that were written, right, not Jewish, like a regular Piskei Din that were written, and court decisions, and rereading them with an eye for what society is like, because it wasn't just Jewish society, it was like this, right? It was every society. You know, you could go back to the 1800s in America. I remember researching once and I found out that in the late 1800s in America, women couldn't be lawyers in America in the late 1800s, okay? Even in the late 1800s. Why? Right. No, but if a woman wanted to be, they wouldn't allow her to be. Why? This is fascinating, because her husband had rights to cancel any contract she wrote. Just like in Judaism, right? He could be Mayfair, her Nedarim. It's the same thing. In the late 1800s in America, this was going on still. And a woman couldn't be a lawyer because there was a court case where they brought it up, and a woman wanted to be a lawyer. She was obviously educated. And they said, well, since your husband can cancel out your contract, nullify them, so you can't be a lawyer, because where does it leave all your contracts you're going to write? So they're rereading all these things, like a study they're doing, and she was saying, I'd love to do it with Jewish shooting, to basically, you know, reread them with an eye for what our society is like now. And that would be very interesting to, you know, how this would all be viewed differently. You know, what's interesting, what's different about these kind of cases, if you think about it, these laws are absolutely irrelevant nowadays. There's no, they have no relevance. So, you know, in this sense, they're very bothersome to read these texts that totally, you know. But on the other hand, you have to see them in their society. Also, all the Dinei Yerusha. Dinei Yerusha, nowadays we write our own wills. The Dinei Yerusha aren't relevant. A woman doesn't have her own money. Of course she does. Woman has property. She has money. She can inherit. The father could say, I want to give equal to all my children. I want to give all my money to my daughter, not to my son. He could do whatever he wants. There's no Pishnayim anymore. So all these laws are no longer relevant halachically anymore. You can bypass them for the most part. When it comes to, you know, the ones, mefate, you know, it doesn't exist. Nobody gets convicted in a Beit Din for rape and has to pay this money. At least not that I know. Maybe in certain communities, I don't know, maybe in Haredi circles they would take someone to a Beit Din. But generally these aren't as relevant. And we're learning them sort of as, you know, as an eye to understanding the times and what was going on and what they thought was protection. And then it would be interesting to reread them, you know, to think about them using our eye today and how those things have changed and what would, you know, how that change would affect the, you know, what was written, and obviously it's tricky to do that, you know, and again, how you would do that and what you would do, but it's interesting to, you know, but you really have to view it as the understanding better what was going on then and what they thought was protection. They clearly thought that that was protection, to have this guy who hates the woman, accuses her of having slept with someone else, and then is forced to stay married to her, you know, and right, but you have to, so it's bothersome on the one hand. On the other hand, it's just, we can't even understand, because it's just so different than our world, but it obviously was relevant then, and that was protection.